Okay.
All right, good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's news from the Drug War Front. My name is Jeff, and my co-presenter is Marion. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeffrey, and good morning, listeners. What a beautiful day it was today. Come on, everybody, wake up, you sleepy heads. Open your curtains and have a look at the sunshine, but listen to the show.
It's actually a lovely spring morning, isn't it?
It is gorgeous, yeah. Just not too hot yet. So don't wear black if you're going out, people, because I'm telling you, I stood at the bus stop and my legs were burning through my black jeans. Serves me right.
Yeah, there's still a bit of strength in the sun, isn't
there? There is, isn't there?
Well, we're well into October, so...
Indeed. Yeah.
Not too far to go. Okay, welcome, listeners, to this week's News from the Drug War Front, brought to you by CARMA, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy, which is Canberra's peer-based drug use organisation. Now, the intent of the show is to inform and hopefully educate listeners about the failure of the war on drugs, or to describe it more accurately, the war on people who use drugs. So aside from that rather large project, which we've been hammering away at for years, Mary.
15 years at least. Well, 30 years if we're 60 like we are.
Yeah, it's been decades. We also promote the services offered by CARMA and also other agencies in the alcohol and other drug sector in the ACT.
Yeah, and we like to link things together too. So apropos of nothing, often we'll slip off to another topic and discuss it because it's relevant to us. Everything is relevant to us. You know, the world turns nonetheless, and drugs or no drugs. However, I'll tell you a bit about CARMA Troops. The Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy is Canberra's only peer-based drug user group. It provides a wide range of services, including client advocacy, peer treatment support, education, representation, information, creative arts, mentoring and referrals. The CARMA office is located at the Church's Centre at Shop 17, Level 1, 54 Benjamin Way in Belconnen. So if you're on a rapid bus from Civic to Belconnen, if that's where you're coming from, get off at the community bus stop, which is the stop before Westfield, and cross the road and you'll see the white building dead set in front of you. That's the Church's Centre, and CARMA's offices are upstairs at that centre. The hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. CARMA developed and ran the first trial of peer naloxone or Narcan program ever in Australia with 200 opioid users in Canberra. After a very positive evaluation, the new funding was granted and CARMA continues to run opioid overdose recognition response with naloxone workshops. And there's one of those tomorrow. We don't know if it's full yet, but you can contact Dave on 6253 3643. I'll tell you that again, 6253 3643, and see if there's a place for you.
And find out if it's for you.
You don't have to do it. You can do, even if you don't use drugs, you can do it for other people. You
know? Exactly.
I want everybody to be walking around with the capacity. All naloxone or Narcan does, one job, reverses opioid overdose. And if you can save someone's life, it's a great feeling. So just learn to do it. You get paid to do the course. It only takes about an hour and a half to do. It's usually located somewhere near you or can be made available to you. The other thing is that this opioid overdose recognition and response, Dave will also do brief interventions with individual clients. So that can be on your doorstep or on our doorstep. So workers at other alcohol and other drug agencies in the ACT also receive that training. CARMA can assist with issues related to opioid maintenance treatment. Excuse me, that's methadone or buprenorphine. The availability of detox and rehab services in the ACT. The impact of stigma and discrimination. Problems with getting access to proper pain relief. In fact, all issues faced by people impacted by prohibition and the war on people who use drugs.
And as you said before, those issues are many and varied.
Absolutely. There isn't anything that doesn't touch us, does it?
No. Well, there's systemic impediments to being treated as a full rights citizen, in my
opinion. That's right. Our human rights are being violated every minute of every day, Jeffrey. But it doesn't matter. I mean, you look at each individual fly that we have. Muragadi, so Indigenous people. There are pathways for searching. This is a group consultation with lunch provided. People with lived experience of alcohol and other drugs use strongly encouraged to participate. Payment for participation is $20, and only Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander participants. This is on the 22nd of October and the 5th of November this year, 2020. from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m, the Federation Room, Havelock House, Northbourne Avenue, Turner. You book on 6253 3643. Again, that's the same number.
I think it's going to be really important.
I think it's really important too.
Development for the Connection, which is a program of karma, but directed towards Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander.
Indigenous people. Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. And we need more feedback from Indigenous Australians because they work with such a model of shame and embarrassment on their own behaviour. So it's really important that we find out from Indigenous Australians what karma or the Connections can do. Connections is set up specifically for Indigenous Australians to be able to connect with either alcohol and drug services if they want, or how to be safe and stay alive until you're ready to give up if you ever are. But it's a really important project and program.
Yeah, so if you know anyone who you think would be interested, direct them Karma's way. Yeah.
Please do.
Okay, the contents of this News from the Drug War Front broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views and or policies of the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy. Karma does not condone nor condemn drug use and does not promote illegal activity. Karma recognises that drug use happens, and as such, Karma focuses on harm reduction messages, drug treatment support services, advocacy and community development. Karma seeks to reduce the harms associated with drug use, as well as the harms associated with the criminalisation of drug use, through the provision of empowering programs that concentrate on community development, person-centred holistic healthcare, and equity of health service delivery for all people. Also, just mention that we have recommenced outreach activities.
Good.
Which is good.
That's good to hear.
After the COVID lockdown. So
it was very disruptive, wasn't it, Geoffrey, the whole thing with COVID. So it feels like we haven't finished with COVID, people. Don't imagine that for a second. But Canberra has gone some 35 days, maybe 36 days without a new infection. I think that's correct. I could be wrong.
But
we've done reasonably well. And we are included in the bubble, the Queensland bubble of people who are allowed to go straight into Queensland without isolation, but only if you don't go through New South Wales. So that means you've got to catch a plane from here to Queensland to enter the state. And it means that we're doing quite well, but it also means that I think people's testing is reduced to a certain extent. I think people are a little less inclined to get tested because they don't want to know. I think especially maybe our peers, Geoffrey, might not want to know if they're infected by COVID because if they're still using, it will be very difficult to have a life of any kind if you have to isolate yourself for at least 14 days. And really, drug use is a pretty debilitating activity at the moment, especially if it means that you're going to have to withdraw over a period of lockdown. But I think the assumption has been, and certainly Chris many weeks ago said, that they have policies now. If you have an opioid, particularly opioid dependency, they have a policy and a protocol on how to manage opioid-dependent people in lockdown, and will certainly get you onto a substitution program, I think.
And deliver it to you.
And deliver it to you at home. Now, in part, that'll be to make sure you're still at home, so you probably won't know when they're coming. But the point is that you will not be left out on a limb by yourself. Okay, so you've got a peer education organisation involved in the development of the protocol, and the ACT Health and Alcohol and Drug Services. So you've got the BOS, which is the Opioid Substitution Program Deliverers, and your peers who have been involved in the development. So you won't be left out on a limb, and we were considered when the protocol was developed.
Which is
really fundamental, fundamentally essential issue for us.
All right, time for a song, Marion. You've picked another John Butler Trio.
Yes, this is back from... Remember last week I came in and I brought in John Butler Trio's, new-to-me record, called Home. This is another track. I've listened to it now about three or four times, and it just strikes me that he's such an emotive person. This home disc has the first one we played last week was Coffee, Methadone and Cigarettes. The one after, the track after that is called Tell Me Why. That's the one we're going to play now. This is by John Butler Trio.
All right, it's coming up about 12 minutes to 11. You're listening to News from the Drug War Front on the 2XX Community Radio, People Powered Radio, 98.3.
Yeah.
And that was John Butler Trio, and it was called
Tell Me Why.
Tell Me Why.
That's right.
Okay, regular listeners will know that throughout 2020 we've been doing stories as part of the 2020 Support Don't Punish campaign. Supported by Women's Harm Reduction International Network. And we have another story today for you to read.
Yes, Marian? From Veronica.
By Veronica. I'm
very pleased to hear. This one just came in from on the email address that Natasha had put out. And, I'll just read it to you. It's by a woman called Veronica. Well, of course, that's a pseudonym, not necessarily her name. In brackets it says, do you use drugs recreationally? That's inverted commas. We've always been told that you should always be honest with medical staff, no matter what. They are here to help you. So the more information they have, the better. And don't worry, they won't judge you. All you have to do is be honest. I believed and abided by this my whole life, trusting doctors with whatever information they asked for until my answer to, do you use drugs recreational, stopped being a definite no. Do you use drugs recreationally? Sorry, I stopped being a definite no. To make matters worse, my answer stopped being no not too long before I started seeking urgent support for mental health issues that were snowballing faster than I could keep up with. I was fairly new to my status as a user when I had my first stop. A meeting with a social worker from Access Mental Health, who was the first point of contact in the ACT for urgent mental health support. I was still naive in this meeting, so my answer to the question was a moderated sometimes, an answer intentionally brief and sandwiched between in-depth discussion of my years-long struggles that outlasted my few months of recreational highs. I thought that that was a sufficient amount of honesty, and although I was aware they may highlight the connection, that they would still give me genuine help. I was gravely disappointed. I was sent off with the advice to stop doing drugs as they were the cause of all my problems, and a list of hotlines I could have Googled myself. I was unaware that my drug usage could time travel and had managed to cause me various pain, upset and fear before I ever touched drugs. But either the social worker believed so, or as soon as the answer to that dastardly question wasn't a simple no, they wrote me off as an idiot drug user whose mental wounds were self-inflicted through the means of illicit substances. As I left, hopelessness setting itself deep within my stomach and heart, I wondered how many other people more desperate than I, desperate than I had sought to help. Shut the door, Jeff. I had sought to help and been met with a brick wall that came up because of their usage, separating me from any tangible kind of help. I'm sorry, troops, but there's somebody interrupting in the background. I didn't mean to say shut the door, Jeffrey, into the mic, but of course I did.
It was just too loud. It was coming through.
It was exceedingly loud. Yeah, I hope it's all clear now. I want to go back to that bit because this is really important. As I left, hopelessness settling itself deep within my stomach and heart, I wondered how many other people more desperate than I had too sought help and been met with a brick wall that came up because of their drug usage, separating them from any tangible kind of help. The second time I sought urgent help at the Calvary Hospital emergency room, I thought I had learned my lesson. I was prepared. I knew the help I needed and I knew how to get it. So when that question came up again, my answer was even more moderated. Occasionally, this is in quotes, in party or clubbing contexts, once every few months. That was an end of quote. A fairly normal answer for someone of my age. I thought usage so sparse it could barely affect me and much less cause my brain to lead a full mutiny against me. But apparently, occasionally is still the wrong answer. A better answer, resulting in 5 precious antipsychotics to last me the unknown number of months before my psychiatrist's appointment. But once again, the instructions, stop doing drugs. They are the source of your problem. You are doing this to yourself. Wow, this is good. Finally, my first psychiatric appointment, long awaited. The question came up once more, and this time I answered, and I'll put this in brackets, correctly. No, I am not a drug user. A lie, a bald-faced lie, but one that gets me the help I need. Medication that makes me stabler, able to get out of bed and not hide from the world, terrified of the things I see in shadows, even though I know they aren't really there. The help I had been searching, waiting for, but one that necessitated a lie, because it turns out when your answer to that question is anything but no, you are placed into a new category, user. Addict, someone whose problems come from the chemicals they place in their lungs and stomach and veins, and whose problems would be solved without. Such a drastic simplification of drug users, it could make me laugh or cry. So what will I tell my children one day? That they should always be honest except for when help comes with terms and conditions applied? That if they make the same choices I did, to be wary that there will always be a label stuck on them, or stuck to them. Not with glue, but with staples. Ouch. Restricting them and their rights and their safety unless they cover it up. Will they live in a different world by then? One where they don't have to cover, or one where they have to cover even more? I cannot predict that, but can only hope that if they ever have to fight the same battles inside their own brains, they are given help freely and without question, without the question, because no matter what, they, we, I deserve a chance to live contently inside my own brain.
What an excellent story.
That is
really
great.
Powerful.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, I have been waiting so long for one of those stories because it hasn't been my story to tell, but because I'm psych trained nurse, mm-hmm. I knew that was happening. Thank you so much, Veronica, for that story. I'm really thrilled to read it. It is so good. That is it, the question. I don't always encourage people to tell lies, but wow. Horses for courses, hey?
The damage that can be done by actually being candid and
honest
can outweigh any potential. I mean, ideally in any professional relationship with a medical, health provider,
you should be able to tell the truth and not be judged.
But in so many cases, whether it's people telling their GP that, they've used occasionally or on the weekend, and it comes back with, okay, you've lost your takeaways or...
absolutely.
You know what I mean? It can have serious consequences.
And this whole thing about being... you're mad because you took drugs. That's what made you mad. No. No, absolutely no. But so you have to lie. And that's the problem. Still, we are 60 years down the track. We have major tranquilizers. We have drugs that are available for people with psych problems. But the problem with those drugs is that they flatten you out completely. You have no emotions, no fun, no high, no low, no up, no down, just flat. So, you use stimulants or depressed. So just so you will feel a bit up or a little bit down.
Yeah, I've heard that said by many people.
Yeah, you just want some emotion.
It's like drugs, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Veronica. A very powerful story.
Really good story. Thanks, darling.
Before we go to a song, I just want to mention to people that the annual remembrance ceremony is due again. It's coming up this year on the 25th of October.
26th?
25th? Sorry, 25th annual ceremony on the 26th.
Yeah.
You're right, Mary. Sorry.
For a change. Yay, I won one. But I'm usually not right, Jeffrey, honestly.
Well, between us, we usually get it
yeah,
right.
We do.
Monday the 26th of October, 12:30 to 1:30 at Western Park Yarralumla. Takes place at the dedicated memorial located on the eastern side of Western Park Road opposite the Pescott Lane Junction. Now, it's supported by ATOTA, which is the peak body for alcohol and drug services in Canberra, Karma, and Uniting Church. Now, speakers, this is very exciting, include Jenny Ross King, who's the parent remembering her daughter, and also two youngsters who are recent Karma volunteers, Wilson Oscar and Julian Juhas, and they will be honouring a friend of theirs who sadly lost his life to an overdose.
Oh, good. That's great. I'm really pleased to hear that. Yeah,
really
that we've got young people coming into the area because it's really important that we connect with them, yeah?
Absolutely. No, look, but they're by no means the only ones, but we've got quite a number of young volunteers with drug use experience of their era and their generation, which is very different to ours.
Oh, indeed.
And I've learned as much from them as hopefully I've been able to pass on to them.
We say every day, learn something every day. And, you know, just because we're older doesn't mean we know everything. We sure don't know everything about what's happening today. We say that every week. Tell us what's happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah? I'm really pleased to hear that Karma's got some new vols. Good on you, Wilson and Julian.
The other speaker is Reverend Simon Hansford, who's the moderator at the Uniting Church New South Wales ACT Synod. Now, because of COVID-19 restrictions, if you would like, you may bring a picnic lunch, but it's to be shared only with your family unit. However, coffee and tea will be available for free from a coffee cart as well as some refreshments. Now, the other thing to mention is that if people are interested in coming and haven't got transport, each year
Karma will help.
We total up the number of people who need transport and we can help organise transport.
So get in touch with
Karma. Get in touch with Karma if you're interested. And also, if you want to add names, I've lost count.
Oh, to the list, yes.
To the list, yeah.
And we have had a few people die over the last 12 months, so they could be added to the list. And so many people die each year that I forget. Even if you just want to ring up and add somebody to the list, you can ring them on 6169 7678. That's Marion's number. Or you can email mcconnell@ffdlr.org.au. I'll say that again. .org.au if you want to add a name to the list.
And
because
if you didn't
that's
get that,
the potent
call
bit,
Karma
for
and
you.
And we'll put you on to all the details. But yeah, look, I go every year. It's a very emotional and powerful event.
And it's the one time of the year that we're allowed to let go and not be in control and not be driving the memory of the people that we loved and have lost and not be driving the energy, if you like, or the commitment to rational drug policy or fighting the war on drug users that we feel like we're doing, you know, with the world weight of the world on our shoulders, Jeffrey, every Tuesday, yes?
It's a great event.
Please come to it.
All right, I'm going to take us back to the 70s, my musical era, and this is an Australian blues rock band, Madalake, and 12-pound toothbrush, oldie but goodie. All right, that was from the 1970s Australian blues rock band Madalake and 12-pound toothbrush. I remember hearing that.
That was just what plugged us into it, wasn't it?
Caught my memory, yeah. 11:05, you're listening to News from the Drug War Front, brought to you by Karma, the Canberra Alliance for Harm Minimisation and Advocacy, on People Powered Radio 2XX 98.3 FM. Now, most people will be aware that the federal budget has come down recently.
Hasn't it, Bud?
National peak body, the Australian Injecting Illicit Drug Users League, released a press release in response to the budget, and it's headed no significant bloodborne virus or sexually transmitted infections or alcohol and other drug measures included in the health budget.
What a surprise.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
It is disappointing. I would have hoped that there would have been some kind of I just said some advent or some real, you know, recognition that alcohol and drug use and psych, particularly in a time when we know that psych issues are really important,
mm-hmm.
And we must include alcohol and other drug issues in that, but not, you know, as that story told us, not as one and the same, because they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
and especially all the noise politicians make about, you know, we had the National Ice Task Force and they were going to make investments in support services and stuff, and it never really materialised or, you know, turned into much of substance.
Not at all. And yet you have a look at the anti-violence campaigns, and you just think, well, and then again, they provided nothing for women who are the, you know, subject of domestic violence, and nothing for, in terms of attracting women to getting back to work, no women jobs specifically.
And without childcare support, how can you afford it?
Without childcare, absolutely. And that stupid woman who got on the television and said, well, they can drive on the roads. We're making infrastructure available for they can drive on the roads. Oh,
what?
Good.
Oh,
that was God. So. That was from a Liberal Party frontbencher. Really, Jeffrey.
It's almost hard to believe, isn't
it? Oh, SFB. Really, seriously bad.
Anyway, our peak body, Able, went on to say they expressed their disappointment that there is very little evidence of any new investment in the alcohol and other drugs, bloodborne virus and sexually transmissible infection sectors to address additional demand and challenges for service delivery associated with the pandemic of COVID-19. And a quote from the Chief Executive, Melanie Walker, is, in the 2019 health budget, Able welcomed the Australian Government's announcement of an additional $45.4 million over 4 years, commencing in 2019-20 to step up public health prevention and promotion activities around bloodborne viruses and sexually transmissible infections to deliver on the goals of the National Bloodborne Virus and STI strategies. However, we note that the majority of this funding is yet to be allocated to any activities. Despite the obvious challenges in staying on top of prevention and treatment priorities in the context of COVID-19.
And that's what happens. They allocate money, but nobody ever sees it.
Well, that's
where did it go?
It gets forgotten or
it's
other issues.
It's in a bucket somewhere. Yeah, but
other
who's
issues
got it?
Overwhelm it. Yeah.
Who's hanging on to it?
In addition, while access to alcohol and other drug treatment services has at times been restricted in light of COVID-19, there just doesn't seem to be any significant additional investment in these services to address COVID-19-related bottlenecks and increased demand, said Ms. Walker.
That said, the health budget papers do contain some good news for people who use or have used drugs in a broader sense. With significant investments in the area, this is going on with the Able press release, significant investments in the areas of mental health, telehealth and new PBS listings for liver cancer, which has been one of the biggest cancer killers of people over the last, I think, 30 years or so. Okay, there are also several NH and MRC grants to projects relating to hepatitis C, including in custodial contexts and methamphetamine use. In summary, it goes on, while we are happy that the funding for BBV STI initiatives announced in last year's health budget still stands, that money needs to flow if it's to do any good, particularly in the light of the additional pressures and constraints on services due to COVID-19. Also, we already knew that between 200,000 and 500,000 Australians were being turned away from drug treatment each year due to a lack of capacity in the sector before COVID-19. With the temporary service closures, rising unemployment and additional pressures arising from the pandemic, it's likely that those numbers are even greater now. It's important that frontline services are able to keep up with demand, and Able was hoping to see additional investment in these key areas in 2020, said Ms. Walker. Able, as you probably all know, is the national body for representing people who use or have used illicit drugs, peak body for state and territory, peer-based organisations, user organisations.
Indeed. But, I'm afraid it's just another issue that tends
more
to,
of the same.
Yeah, more
yeah.
of the same.
And, you know, we would go back to that and say, so where is the money? You know, where's it going to? And, Jeffrey, on the news, I think they're saying that people are dying. Drug users are dying at the rate of one a week at the moment, right? Now, that's pretty horrendous in Australia from overdose. Yeah. From drug use, drug use related, okay, I think. But overdose was what was implied. I'm pretty sure the research has come out and it's actually related to overdose. I don't want you to take my word on that, and I know that I'm very sloppy on my research, but things pass me by, pass by my ears or my eyes, and I pick them up because they're related to us. So I do tend to go a bit off a bit tangentially. But if people are dying at that rate, and liver cancer is due largely to hepatitis C transmission, which is largely due to injecting drug users or sharing injecting equipment, has been for many years, where's the response? Yeah? Well, where's the money with the response, more to the point? If it's still in a bucket, it's not helping anybody.
I think on the Hep C angle, there is an effort being made to try and reach their target of eliminating Hep C by 2030. Now, whether or not they can get it done depends on the involvement of peers.
But isn't that about curing it rather than getting the transmission intercepted?
Oh, that's true, yeah. It's elimination of Hep C.
So it's getting, so it's curing it. I mean, that's what they were looking to do with COVID, is to squash it, eliminate transmission. And so what they're doing is looking at a virus, you know, interferer, if you like, so to stop it transmission from one person to another, and also to get a vaccine so that people don't get it. Well, they probably won't get a vaccine for hepatitis C, but they have got a cure,
which
a very
is extraordinary.
Substantially, you know, good cure that works with very little side effect, nothing really in the way of side effects.
And we encourage people to get treatment.
We encourage people to go and get that treatment, but they're not looking at interfering in the vectors, in the way it's transmitted, other than by needle and syringe exchange.
Mm,
and projects, so washing hands and so on, you know, which are good projects, but not, why not change the laws on drugs?
Well, there's your
problem. It's a fundamental issue.
Solved.
They're never going to come to grips with that while they keep on closing that eye that looks at it.
Sure. And until there's community pressure, I don't think politicians are going to be prepared to consider it, let alone actually do something. Anyway, look, this next story is from Daily Mail Australia, so just take
it with a pinch of salt.
Well, sometimes their perspective is
a tad biased, do you think?
Yeah, often propaganda related for prohibition. Anyway, Australia's biggest drug dealing hotspots have been revealed, including one very trendy and idyllic country town where meth is out of control. It's by Levi Parsons, September the 30th. Drug dealers are moving out of dark alleys and setting up their illegal operations online, with some very unexpected Australian towns plagued by a wave of crystal methamphetamine and cocaine. An increasing number of drug users are placing orders on popular social media platforms like Instagram and getting their drugs delivered to their door in to seemingly idyllic towns. New data also reveals which Australian suburbs have been the biggest drug dealing hotspots in the midst of the changing dynamics of the narcotics trade and the COVID-19 pandemic. In New South Wales, the picturesque beachside community of Merriweather, 2 hours north of Sydney, has topped the list for the most drug dealers, with 268 busts recorded in the year to March 2020. The affluent surf spot had a staggering 5 times more arrests than Mount Druitt, which was next on the list, followed by Kempsey on the mid-north coast, Waterloo and Zetland, Liverpool, Chippendale, Darlington, Redfern, Newcastle, Surry Hills, Darlinghurst and Cabramatta.
Mm. Even more surprising was Mudgee, an idyllic rural town known for its world-renowned vineyards, was the number one location for ice and amphetamines dealing. The small town recorded 226 arrests for amphetamine dealing in that time, almost twice the number of the Central Coast's Bateau Bay, Long Jetty and the entrance, which is up around Gosford, which entered the list at number two. This is a quote from Dr. John Coyne, the head of strategic policy and law enforcement. He quotes, "I suspect a large amount of recreational drug use is increasingly being sourced off social media." And so that's, he said, that's from the, he's from the strategic policing and policing, yes, and law enforcement at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. He told the Daily Telegraph. "Now all of a sudden," this quote goes on, "the guy who delivers your meal can also deliver your marijuana or other drugs." So we've got this storm of change and social change where people are having and getting used to doing more from home. End of quote. The former Australian Federal Police officer added that a decade earlier, authorities were highly concerned about potentially out-of-control drug dealing on the dark web. But what they didn't consider was that deals would go down on mainstream social media apps with billions of users. In Victoria, the top spot where drug dealers were nabbed was Melbourne's CBD with 164 offences, followed by Yarra with 125 and Wongaratta in the near the New South Wales border with 116. That probably has to do something to do with the bottleneck at the border too, Geoffrey.
Quite possibly.
I suspect. Mm. With the 116 there, Mildura, Port Phillip, Knox, Warrnambool, South Bank, Dandenong and Shepparton also made the unenviable list.
Now, the piece concludes, Australian Border Force Acting New South Wales Regional Commander Matthew O'Connor said since the onset of the pandemic, mail and air cargo drug seizures have spiked. Well, I guess it's because the ports have shut down and planes aren't flying. And
nobody's going to or from,
Nobody's travelling, In total, there have been over 13,000 drug detections from January 20 to July 31st, a 34% increase on the corresponding period last year. Queensland figures take into account offences for drug possession as well. And the spot with the most arrests was Brisbane City with 1,756, Fortitude Valley with 1,090 and Bowen Hill 652. And it lists some other top 10 places in Brisbane. A spokesperson for Facebook, the company that owns Instagram, said the site has taken down drug-related content on 1.4 million occasions between April and June 2020. The company reiterated they do not allow the sale of any illicit substances on their website and have been focusing on working with experts and investing in technology to keep drugs off their platform.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult. I would imagine, you know, you think of the volume of material that would appear on these huge platforms every day.
Yes. And the interesting thing about this kind of article for me, though, Geoffrey, is that at the same time as they are telling, presenting a very anti-drug story, they are also telling people maybe where it might be possible to score. So drug dealing hotspots in New South Wales, Merriweather, Mount Druitt, Kempsey, Waterloo and Zetland, that's in the CBD, Liverpool on the outskirts of Sydney, Chippendale and Darlington, again into the CBD, Redfern, Newcastle, Surry Hills and Darlinghurst and Cabramatta. Now, those are on the basis of drug crimes or arrests. Okay, that's how they are assessing that the availability of drugs is a hotspot. In Victoria, Melbourne CBD 164, then Yarra, Wongaratta, Mildura, Port Phillip, Knox. It's different layout in Melbourne, isn't it, Geoffrey? Very different. So Melbourne CBD, you actually do have people out on the streets selling, but in Sydney, they don't consider the CBD actually part of the marketing strategy, if you like, of drug dealers. Then Wongaratta, Mildura, Port Phillip, Knox, Warrnambool, South Bank, Dandenong and Shepparton. Again, these are from the Crime Statistics Agency data from March 2019 to March 2020.
So it's only one particular source of evidence and one particular
And it becomes
aspect.
An advertisement, as far as I'm concerned. People who read it see it as don't buy your house there. Right, on the right wing, she says, holding out her left hand. And on the other hand, other people would see it as this is where we go to get drugs. And I'm not trying to be flippant. I'm simply saying that these kinds of articles serve two purposes.
Or
two
papers.
Masters, if
they
you
sell
like.
Newspapers.
Yes. And it's about sensationalism, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And shamefully, it has been for a long time, which doesn't enhance the debate or lead to any potential solution.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't. It does not create an intelligent discussion.
No.
Which is what we want. And in fact, what Geoffrey just said by enhanced debate, right? Intelligent discussion, enhanced debate, that's what we're talking about. Promote dialogue. Don't just shut it down. Don't just send people out to the suburbs that you know about to get their drugs from. Talk about the drugs laws and why Merriweather has 268 arrests.
And recognise the complexity and the length of time that the war on drugs, war on people who use drugs, has continued as a global policy.
To snap down on people who are drug users.
And weigh that up against even the so-called criteria of the people who support prohibition. You know, they said you know, one of the United Nations declarations was a drug-free world by, I think it was 2010 or 2015.
Oh, really? Did they?
You know, like,
why would you make that kind of statement?
Reminds me.
How do you do drug-free world when we rely on things like penicillin to get rid of infections?
Well, it was a nonsensical aspiration to start
stupid
with.
Stupid bloody thing to say.
In defiance of the reality, which is that there's a black market
absolutely.
In every country around the world.
The fundamental premise is drug use happens, right? It's in the forefront of what Karma says in its disclaimer at the front of the program. Drug use happens. Okay, the more you assume that it doesn't, the more off into fantasy land you are going. You don't have to take drugs to be silly in the head. It's just silly to think that it doesn't happen.
And I think, like any complex issue, we need to look at the facts, look at the evidence, look at what's worked, what hasn't, and have the political courage to actually try something different than just the same old failed policies of tough on drugs, war on people who use drugs.
It's absolutely. It's, and if listeners, if you think we repeat ourselves ad nauseum every week, well, we do.
We do.
We do. We say the same. But then we are only following our political masters and mistresses, if you like. They repeat the same crap week in, week out, and we have to tell you the same. Sorry, nothing going on here. But there are always undercurrents of action.
And there are countries that are doing things that are far more productive.
There are, and we actually go on to that later on.
Anyway, we're going to play the track you recommended from last week, Mary.
That's right. This is, remember last week I introduced you to John Butler Trio, again, like nobody really needs to be introduced to him. This track is the first one that caught out. It uses coffee, methadone and cigarettes. Okay.
All right, it's 29 minutes past 11. You're listening to News from the Drug War Front on Canberra's people-powered radio, community radio, 98.3 FM. That was John Butler Trio and
Coffee, Methadone and Cigarettes.
Yeah, it's a lovely song.
It is a nice song, isn't it? It's really poignant too. He talks about his dad and his grandfather and the fires in Nanup, you know, in 1959 in Western Australia, which is not stuff that I'd known about, but certainly stuff that rings true for me 10 years later in the Vietnam War. So his grandfather was in a war, his father was called up, and coffee, methadone and cigarettes was his dad's way of dealing with the hurt and the pain that he encountered. It's a great track, and it's a great album, people, if you get a chance to listen to it or get a hold of it.
I love myself some John Butler.
Yeah.
All right, one of the probably proudest public health initiatives that Australia can lay claim to is the establishment of the National Needle and Syringe Program. Mm. This piece is from the Kirby Institute, 25 years of measuring the health of marginalised and resilient communities who inject drugs. The latest report of the Australian Needle Syringe Program survey marks 25 years of significant research conducted in partnership with a marginalised community, and it reveals the key trends of the last decades. The survey's been released for the 25th time. It monitors HIV, hepatitis C, and sexual and drug use behaviours amongst people who inject drugs, and is one of the longest running surveys of its kind internationally. It's led by Professor Lisa Ma at the Kirby Institute at University of New South Wales, Sydney. The report shows that over the past 25 years, HIV prevalence has remained remarkably low, less than 3%, and amongst injectors, less than 1%, which is extraordinary.
It is great, isn't it?
Although hepatitis C prevalence has been historically high, prevalence has significantly declined in recent years.
Wow, that's good.
This is a testament to the bipartisan support that was achieved when Australia established needle and syringe programs to prevent transmission of blood-borne viral infections back in the late 1980s, says Professor Ma. Why count in the numbers counts? Quote, too often, the people most in need of targeted and specialist healthcare are the people that we know the least about, says Melanie Walker, CEO of AVIL, the Australian Injecting and Illicit Drug Users League, and a collaborator on the NSP survey. Around the world, people who inject drugs are marginalised and stigmatised, and this forces them away from mainstream health services. It also means that they are excluded from standard health data collection, which places them at risk of being excluded from health policy and health service design, end quote. Data informs what health services look like, where a service is located, and how much funding is dedicated to it. Data tells us where we have a health problem and how effective our efforts to combat it are. Quote, 25 years of annual surveys among people who inject drugs is a monumental achievement for Australia. Few countries have had quite this achievement, says Ms. Walker. This report represents 25 years of ensuring the health of people who inject drugs is measured and recorded. And it means that in Australia, at least, our communities are visible, continued Ms. Walker.
Hmm. How is the data collected? The article goes on. Many people who use drugs access sterile injecting equipment through a needle syringe program outlet. These are located all over Australia, offering people who use drugs access to advice, information and referrals alongside sterile needles and syringes and other injecting equipment, depending upon where you are. A quote, Australia's comprehensive network of more than 4,000 needle syringe programs is one of the best in the world, says Dr. Jenny Iverson, who has coordinated the study and authorised the NSP survey report for more than a decade. The quote goes on, access to sterile injecting equipment and drug use advice was pivotal to Australia achieving such low HIV prevalence amongst people who inject drugs, and it has played a major factor in our recent hepatitis C reductions. Quote goes on, support from needle syringe program or NSP staff and clients is also the key to why this survey produces such high quality and useful data. Dr. Iverson says that we are fortunate to be in a position to build on the trusted relationship between NSP program staff and people who use drugs. And she quotes, for 2 weeks in October each year, the survey is supported by around 50 NSPs across Australia. That means it's coming up, or have we just had it, Geoffrey? That was the finger prick test, wasn't it?
I'm not sure which survey they're referring
to. That's a hepatitis C injection. Those who agree, complete a brief self... Yes, there we go. Here it goes. Those who agree, complete a brief self-administered questionnaire and provide a capillary dried blood spot, which is a small prick of the blood from the finger. Over 25 years, the survey has collected robust and consistent data in relation to injecting and sexual behaviours. History of testing for blood-borne viruses, imprisonment and drug treatment. The quote goes on, when we match the survey data with the biological data, we don't only learn about the prevalence of blood-borne viruses amongst people who inject drugs, we learn about the behaviours that may increase the risk, and we also learn about prevention strategies developed within these populations and ways to harness existing safety strategies to maximise both health outcomes, says Dr. Iverson. Okay, so what does 25 years of data tell us? The 2020 report analyses data among the 57,000 respondents who have participated since 1995 and measures trends over the past 25 years. Over this time, HIV prevalence has remained stable and very low, while hepatitis C has significantly declined in recent years, largely due to the availability of direct-acting antivirals, or DAA, which cure hepatitis C in most people. These treatments have been available through the PBS in Australia since 2016. The NSP has monitored hepatitis C prevalence through an antibody test that measures lifetime exposures to infection since 1995, but has also conducted an RNA to monitor current infection since 2015. When the two test results are combined, researchers can determine the proportion of people who have been infected but who are now effectively cured of the virus. In 2015, prior to the introduction of DAAs, or direct-acting antivirals, the proportion of people who inject drugs living with hepatitis C was 1 in 2, so 50%, said Professor Lisa Maher, who leads the NSP survey. According to the 25-year report, this is reduced to less than 1 in 5 in 2019, which is a staggering reduction, really.
Mm.
The quote goes on, these reductions are unprecedented, that word again, and indicate that a population level reduction in hepatitis C prevalence is achievable through high levels of treatment and cure among people who inject drugs.
Yeah, look, it's a monumental. Another paragraph to go, but just to comment that the actual national NSP program has been an incredible success. I think there are still gaps, especially in parts of rural and regional Australia. And, and even times here in the ACT, I know we've got vending machines for the weekends and some pharmacists sell fit packs and stuff like that. But, you know.
Now, the NSP is actually substantially the way most people get their injecting equipment, I think, the bulk of it anyway, because it's free.
Absolutely.
And because of the variety of things they can get, especially from a level one NSP facility.
Which we're very fortunate to have in the
at
ACT.
At least two of in the ACT, and they're really at high level. Yep.
Okay, the piece concludes with the heading, Impact for All to See, the letter C. Australia is set to become one of the first countries in the world to eliminate hepatitis C. Well, let's hope so.
Let's hope so indeed.
There's still a lot of people who are reticent,
have not been tested and have not come forward and haven't had their blood taken, don't know, and have not come to treatment, so they haven't been tested at all.
And are rightly suspicious that the direct-acting antivirals...
Look what happens when you're psych-affected and you say that you take drugs. You don't get the treatment. They say, give up your drugs.
Yeah, this is where the involvement... I mean, people are most likely to believe somebody who has had Hep C treatment with new direct-acting antivirals.
It's peer-driven education that really matters and is most potent in this area.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so Australia's set to become one of the first countries in the world to eliminate Hep C, and researchers, policymakers and community leaders agree that it's done so by putting affected populations at the heart of the hepatitis C response. Here. Quote, the data that we have in Australia, thanks to the NSP survey, highlights the benefits of investing in robust sentinel surveillance to monitor trends in drug use, sexual and injecting risk behaviour, treatment uptake and prevalence of bloodborne viral infections amongst people who inject drugs, said Professor Ma. This is absolute best practice when it comes to biobehavioural surveillance systems to investigate the health of people who inject drugs. Over 25 years, the reports have informed drug and health policy and practice in Australia and also globally, including the UNAIDS Global AIDS Monitoring and the World Health Organization Global Health Sector Strategy and its goals to eliminate hepatitis C as a public health threat by the year 2030. That was the World Health Organization's goal.
Another interesting target, but probably more achievable. I like the idea of eliminating hepatitis C, but... it's tricky to know whether you've actually eliminated unless you're going to test everybody in the world.
And are we going to eliminate further transmission of hepatitis C? You know, I mean, if everyone we're okay. But
it's about exposure. It's about interception between positive and negative, isn't it? I say this every week, it's about really intimate behaviour. How do you interfere in people's sharing equipment when they are partners, for instance? How do you stop? And when the power imbalance is very high, you know, very distinct between men and women. Mm. And this, you know, refers to stop the violence against women, stop that power imbalance, because
very important.
You stop the transmission of infection of STDs, BBVs, and violence, really. So that power imbalance is really important. It's a really interesting data set that they have produced for us, and it also leads to further discussion, if we let it, Geoffrey, particularly about the role in sexual relationships between injecting drug users or between injecting drug users and others. And that was really the problem with HIV transmission. It wasn't so much that injecting drug users were going to become infected. It was about the others in the community, about babies and about straight people who were going to get infected by having sex with injecting drug users. Now we're talking to injecting drug users, or to us, about us and caring about us as not victors, not just puppets, but as healthcare consumers. So it's become a little bit more sophisticated, and I'm pleased to see it, but we still haven't got over that hurdle quite of approving of the behaviour that we exhibit, that is injecting drug use, and saying it happens. So back to that again.
And there's still too much stigma and discrimination.
Indeed there is.
All right, I thought it was appropriate, given it's a beautiful spring day, to play Perfect Day by Lou Reed.
Oh, lovely.
It's a beautiful song.
It is a beautiful song. I love it.
Perfect Day. All right, that was Lou Reed and Perfect Day from his classic album Transformer. Yes. Okay, we're into the last 14 minutes of this week's News from the Drug War Front. We've got an interesting piece from Canada.
Yeah, from Winnipeg News by Mark Arsenault. Winnipeg News, September the 26th, and it's called More Overdoses, Fewer Drugs, How the Pandemic is Changing Drug Use. So Winnipeg, Canada. The COVID-19 pandemic has impacted many industries and supply chains, including the drug trade. Winnipeg Police Service said the pandemic has dried up the supply of drugs that come into Manitoba, having unexpected consequences. Marion Willis, Executive Director of Moorburg House, a long-term recovery home for men experiencing addiction, homelessness and mental health issues, said back in May she noticed a shift in the type of substances people were struggling with. A quote from her is, "Quite a significant reduction in the use of crystal meth," said Willis, "but quite a dramatic increase in the use of opioids, to the extent it's actually taking a lot of lives right now." Willis said, "When a person is experiencing addiction, they'll replace it with something else if one substance isn't available." She said people have been switching to opioids because meth has been hard to find. Just between you and me, Jeffrey, I think that's a good thing. They weren't using it simply because they couldn't buy it. She said if they could buy it, there was a very limited supply. Instead of $10 a point, it was likely to be $40 or $50, which sounds more like us.
I think around the world, the impact of COVID on prices and availability has...
Of ice in particular. Yeah. Well, it's also been opioids. The prices certainly increased and availability has been, you get what you get, that's it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all much of a muchness, the same kind of drugs available everywhere.
Anyway, Winnipeg Police Chief Danny Smythe went on to say that the travel ban put in place to curb the spread of COVID-19 had affected the supply of drugs coming into the city. Although a lack of drugs initially sounded good, Smythe said it led to an uptick in heroin and opioid use. Mm. Quote, "The police service in the first 6 months, we attended over 45 overdose deaths, 18 of which were overdose deaths," said Smythe. Smythe said that's compared to just 39 overdoses, 15 of which were fatalities in all of 2019. He said the Winnipeg Fire Paramedic Service administered naloxone more than 550 times in the first 6 months of 2020.
Wow.
More than double of what was administered in the entire year of 2019.
Yeah.
So a massive increase.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Naloxone use.
Yeah.
Main Street Project is home to one of the only detoxification centres in Winnipeg. Dawn Cumming, Director of Detoxification and Stabilisation, said in April that they started seeing a change in meth use, and she's quoted saying approximately a 50% decline in methamphetamine use, as declared by people who use substances who were coming into our withdrawal management unit. But corresponding with that, we were seeing an increase in alcohol and opioid use. Willis said drug use is a complex issue and it can't be solved by removing one substance from the mix. And she ends with a quote, "For as long as we don't address the root cause, there will always be people struggling and there will always be people that will look for something to ease their pain,"
mm-hmm.
which is so true.
A word has never been spoken.
Absolutely. No, that's so true. Look, we haven't got time to do all of this next story, but it's a very interesting one about the state of Oregon in the US.
In the US, yeah, not Canada, right, but quite close to the border.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
It's by Philip Smith from alternate.org, but it's basically Oregon is on the cusp of major drug law reform, and that's decriminalising everything.
Everything.
And I'll read a couple of paragraphs. Come November the 3rd, residents in Oregon will have a chance to approve the most far-reaching drug reform measures ever to make a state ballot when they vote on Measure 110, the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act. Whilst the initiative indeed expands drug treatment, what makes it really revolutionary is that it would also decriminalise the possession of personal use amounts of all drugs, from psychedelics to cocaine and methamphetamine, as well as heroin and other illicit opioids. Mm. And there's a quote, quote, "Our current drug laws can ruin lives based on a single mistake, sticking you with a lifelong criminal record that then prevents you from getting jobs, housing and more."
Mm.
And that's Bobby Bird, an organiser with the More Treatment for a Better Oregon campaign, in a press release.
So, Jeffrey, you're going to put that on the website, aren't you?
I'll put that on, I'll put it on the website.
It's a good article.
It's a really good article. And if it passes...
It'll be a great thing for the United States because it will actually be a step further forward than they have ever taken.
Absolutely.
And compared with the rest of the US, it's really radical. And very important to note. But they are just across the border up there in Oregon. It's really
from Canada, far
northwest, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's really quite important that they take account of that. The other thing that I would like to mention very quickly is that coming up is another project on women. Some women need drugs. No women need violence. Stop violence against women who use drugs. Now, we know there is a national campaign against on violence against women, even though the funding for that has been less than substantial. There have been ads about it. But Natasha says there will be 16 days of action from when November the 25th to December the 10th. If you want to get in touch or become a part of the conduct of this project or become involved with Natasha or want support with poster translation, please contact Natasha Nicolet, or that's nat@gmail.com, or contact Natasha on 6253-3643 at Karma. So some women need drugs, no women need violence. Stop violence against women who use drugs. Coming up at the end of November. So it's a fair way away, but I just thought I'd give you, give Natasha a shout out and let you know that it's coming up. But more, but sooner than that, we've got the Remembrance Day, 25th Remembrance Day, next Monday. So there's no more radio shows before that happens. So get in touch again, 6253-3643. Tomorrow is...
Actually, there is. It's on the 26th. Today's only the 13th, so we've got next week.
Oh, I thought it was next Monday.
Yeah, no, 26th, Monday week.
Okay, we'll yeah, 13 days it is too. Yeah. Oh, here goes Marion with her absolute total dislocation with the calendar.
But it's good to let people know that it is upcoming, and it is a very important event that... Look, I've gone to the last 10 or 12.
And the 22nd of October and the 5th of November, so we've got another week... and a half before these happen, at least. 22nd of October would be the Friday, would it? The 13th today, that's 9 days ahead. So that'd be the Thursday, okay. So anyway, so we have another week before the Murugadi Pathways for Searching workshops come up, just to let you know that they're on and they're important. 6253-3643, if you're as scattered as we are this morning, or as I am, you might want to come in, get in touch with Karma, find out more about these, or ATODA, or Families and Friends for Drug Law Reform. Find out about Murugadi, which is the Indigenous consultation that's being conducted by Connections, Family and Friends for Drug Law Reform, and the Women Don't Need Violence. Women who use drugs, women don't need violence, and that's through Natasha. Again, 6253-3643.
There are always really events important. Coming up, that's for
stuff
sure.
Stuff happening all the time, especially this time of year. And workshop tomorrow, the Dave's running the Naloxone.
Yep.
Opioid overdose recognition response workshop with Narcan.
So if you have missed anything listening to the radio, it's hard to get phone numbers down when you're listening to radio. Call Karma,
6253-3643.
Yeah. I had a mind lapse there myself.
I know, I've said that six times today, so I'm doing quite well on it, I reckon.
And, yeah, get in touch. I mean, yep. We have a social media presence. We've got a website. We've got some WhatsApp programs which offer support for peers, for the radio show, for Karma. You know, it's an exciting time at Karma.
Absolutely. And it's spring and it's exciting time anyway, right? It's the beginning of the new financial year. Projects are starting, people are starting, people are coming out of lockdown, and not just lockdown for COVID, but lockdown for winter. And although we've had a horrible financial year for the last 12 months, it's been awful, we are coming out. Today's a beautiful day. We'll take this as the first day of the rest of our lives, shall we? And well, hope true. That it all gets better from now on.
Yeah, look, touch wood, we can continue to do well with COVID here in the ACT. And
I'm tired of being depressed too, Geoffrey. You know, this depressing.
It's been a difficult year.
It's been a horrible year.
It's been a really tough year, you know.
Just for drug users, for everybody.
For everybody, yeah. And no wonder mental health has become
an issue
of concern for a lot of people.
And so many people. And people are admitting to it, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so important. But the thing is, and maybe people who are working in treatment could get this into their heads. People don't necessarily use drugs and cause their mental health issues. they use drugs to get relief from their mental health issues. Right? Either the effect of the psych drugs that they're on or the effects of the mental health psychoses of, you know, delusions that they're getting. So they need relief from those kinds of effects, the symptoms, signs and symptoms of mental health psychoses and neuroses. So
I think we need a broader...
Don't judge them like that, yeah.
...broader construct for understanding...
Absolutely,
...the human condition, whether it's mental health, physical health, the state of society. And I think COVID gives us a period, a pause, a chance for a reflection on...
I think so. The amount of time that we spend in time... And remember, Jeffrey, when we first came back to the radio... It was very difficult to come in. We need to go home.
Yep.
We're getting up to it.
Yeah, just about ready to go. I found a copy of our
Golden
song,
Brown.
Golden Brown, yeah. The Stranglers. But
it's always a bit of a hold your breath. Has Jeffrey got Golden Brown?
I have
Brown?
It this week. But thanks, listeners. And look, contact Karma if you have any questions about naloxone training, the consultation with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander clients.
And the Women's Project coming up from November the 26th to December the 10th.
Volunteering, get involved.
The Narcone program, anything. Yep. There's lots of stuff happening coming up. So let's go, hey?
All right, bye-bye, here's the Stranglers. Everyone. Take care, everyone.
Take care. Safe.